The accusation being circulated that I influenced these scientists to change their minds by bribing them with millions of dollars in grant money is absolutely false and simply preposterous.
That is Dr. Anthony Fauci. He's one of those people whose name and voice are more famous than his title. But before he retired, Fauci was a lead member of the White House COVID-19 response team and President Biden's chief medical advisor. On Monday, he was testifying on Capitol Hill, being grilled about his role in shaping the U.S. response to the pandemic. The toughest questions came from House Republicans, including Congressman John Joyce of Pennsylvania.
Do you agree that Americans now have lost their trust in science, in lead science from government because of misinformation like this?
Well, when you talk about misinformation, I think that you have to be careful. It's not disinformation. It was information that ultimately proved when you put the aerosolization in
that it was not an effective role to have 6 feet of distancing.
Dr. Fauci was the face of America's response to the pandemic, a pandemic that has killed more than 1 million Americans, a pandemic that has affected our lives in more ways than I can easily summarize.
Dan Diamond covers health policy for The Post, and he was there in the room on Monday to hear Fauci's testimony. I wanted to talk with him to understand why this hearing has catapulted Fauci back into the headlines.
There are questions that many Americans still have, even if we have wanted to move past them out of some sort of like primordial PTSD. I think there are differences, though, in how folks want to grapple with the pandemic. There are Democrats on the panel questioning Dr. Fauci who say we need to be more proactive. We need to look forward. And there are more Republicans who want to look back and say, Dr. Fauci, why was this decision made when there might not have been the evidence behind it? Or Dr. Fauci, what do we know about where the pandemic began? And that, I think, is the crux of the disagreement in Congress over the hearing with Dr. Fauci and where they are going to go on pandemic legislation.
From the newsroom of The Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Martine Powers. It's Tuesday, June 4th. And today, I'm talking with Dan about this hearing on Capitol Hill, where Fauci was faced with Republican allegations that he tried to cover up the origin of the pandemic. We're going to talk through some of the highlights of that hearing, the political motivations for why we're seeing this debate play out now. But we're also going to talk about how the politics of the pandemic are still shaping how lawmakers and we as the public think about lessons learned. Dan, thank you so much for taking the time to have this conversation with us, especially as I understand that you are a little bit under the weather.
Well, Martine, it's been pretty intense few days, and I've used my voice so much that I'm starting to lose it. So appreciate you bearing with me.
So, Dan, what can you tell me about how this panel started and why it's happening now?
4 years ago, the same day that Donald Trump mused about whether injecting disinfectants could help fight COVID.
Right, and then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets on the lungs and it...
Democrats in Congress, led by Nancy Pelosi, set up a panel that was going to be a watchdog on coronavirus. It was going to make sure that the trillions of dollars in emergency spending was going to the right places. It was, according to Pelosi, going to make sure that science and public health experts were being followed. And for the next 3 years, Democrats pushed very hard on Trump-era problems, on Trump officials who tried to interfere with the CDC, or Trump officials who didn't focus on the pandemic because they were too busy trying to fight Joe Biden's election. But then Republicans took power in the House.
And then things flipped, officials that they didn't agree with, and trying to bring those officials in to grill them and what they thought was the incorrect response to the pandemic.
That's absolutely right. I think Republicans, and at the time, Speaker Kevin McCarthy, saw this as a chance to turn the tables and start asking the questions, putting the spotlight to officials. things that had been not the priority of Democrats for nearly 3 years. But at the center of this panel, the new panel, led by Republicans, are two doctors. There's a doctor, Brad Wenstrup, a Republican from Ohio, and a doctor named Raul Ruiz from California, a Democrat. And the two of them were friends. They'd worked together on healthcare bills before. And Dr. Wenstrup, the Republican, when he got offered the job by Kevin McCarthy, went to Ruiz and said, look, we can do this together as doctors. We will put the partisan politics aside and get the real answers and the accountability and the preparation for the next pandemic that Americans really need. That was enticing to Ruiz. I think it's fair to say, Martine, that over the past year and a half, Dr. Ruiz and Democrats feel that hasn't happened, that Republicans have spent more time chasing Dr. Fauci and theories that are unproven rather than focusing on what's ahead and how we can prepare for it.
And so let's start by hearing a little tape from that congressman that you mentioned, Brad Wenstrup from Ohio.
Dr. Fauci, we're here to investigate the COVID-19 pandemic and to explore lessons learned, positive or negative, and to better prepare for future pandemics. Simply put, America cannot move forward, though, without looking back. We must know what went right and what went wrong in order to best ingrain proficiencies and remedy deficiencies.
So tell me a little bit more about what the mood was like in this hearing.
Martine, it felt like a circus. And I have been, probably the reporter who's covered the most panel hearings in person over the past year and a half. And I've been in the room when I'm the only reporter there. There might be two or three other people there. Most Americans have moved past the pandemic. And I think that's reflected in how many people bother to come to this COVID panel's hearings at times. But Monday's hearing was completely opposite. I showed up at the Rayburn House office building. There was a line around the hall of all kinds of people waiting to get in. There were protesters outside. I walked in the room. It was standing room only. There were reporters begging for seats. The entire panel of lawmakers was essentially there, which hasn't always happened. Some of the lawmakers themselves have skipped this panel. There were people interrupting and criticizing Dr. Fauci and saying he should go to prison. And Capitol Police had to step in and escort them out of the room.
Oh, thank you. You're not allowed to
speak. You're not allowed.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, could you have her removed from
yes.
the... Thank you.
Yes.
Please have her removed.
Please.
Excuse me, I asked the Capitol Police to...
There are many Americans who are still upset and aggrieved. And this hearing with Dr. Fauci, for them, was a chance to lash out with words or protests or to just say, we are angry about what happened.
Beginning early in 2020, you became the figurehead of public health.
Dr. Fauci wasn't responsible for all of the policies that people are upset about, but he was the avatar. He was the spokesperson.
There were drinks named after you. You got bobbleheads made in your likeness. You were on the cover of Vogue.
And that makes him a target still today where he is getting death threats. He testified in Congress and his family gets death threats because of anger over COVID.
So it seems like one of the big themes that especially Republican lawmakers in this hearing focused in on was questions around the origins of COVID and the lab leak theory that I think a lot of people are familiar with, the idea that maybe COVID originally leaked out of a lab in China. And they seem to suggest that Fauci had like covered up something about this or that he was part of some plot to keep all of this secret. What evidence were they basing their allegations on?
There are a couple things, Martine, that aren't in dispute. First, that Dr. Fauci's agency was funding risky virus research in Wuhan, China, with the Wuhan Institute of Virology before the pandemic through a nonprofit called Echo Health Alliance. And that nonprofit has had some problems reporting on the work that they were doing to the federal government. They've gotten in trouble. Mm-hmm. They had their funding suspended recently. Next, in the early days of the pandemic, when the virus was first emerging, Dr. Fauci and some other scientists privately convened where they discussed the possibility of a lab origin of the virus. And coming out of that, scientists and Dr. Fauci played down that possibility and suggested that it was more likely that the virus emerged from what's known as a natural origin, the idea that it jumped from an animal, a bat, a cow, whatever, to a human being. But in private, they had raised these concerns. So there's a difference between how people were talking in the early days of the pandemic. And then I think there's one other thing that Republicans kept coming back to.
It is not optional. If you or your employees or your organization that you oversaw were systemically avoiding transparency and illegally hiding or destroying documents that rightfully belong
to one of Fauci's deputies in government, David Morenz, bragged about deleting emails related to the coronavirus origins and evading federal records law when he was corresponding with colleagues, when he was corresponding with Echo Health. And Democrats and Republicans have both been pretty upset about that.
And what do we know about those emails? Like, well, what are the emails that he was trying to delete or cover up?
Well, David Morenz testified to Congress a few weeks ago. I was at that hearing, too.
But I've obviously made mistakes. I've mixed up emails and Gmails. And that's caused me to do all of the things you mentioned, but bring discredit on myself and on the government.
And he said he was deleting those emails because all of the people receiving the emails had become, at that point, targets of either investigations or public criticism. And he was just trying to protect them from further public harm, he said. Those emails involved a lot of strategizing around how to push back on critics who might have said that Dr. Fauci and others were not being honest about a lab leak, or to try and help protect Echo Health Alliance, this grantee that was getting money from the federal government but facing questions over its work in Wuhan. Things that really should have been in work email and not being done on personal email or being deleted. I mean, Martine, it's also possible there were a lot of emails that we just don't know about because they don't exist anymore, because David Morenz did delete them. So these are the emails that Congress has made available.
So you can see how Republicans are in a position to make a big deal out of this, because it sounds like we don't know what was in those emails, and like we don't have a full picture of what was deleted here. But it also sounds like Democrats were taking a little bit more of a measured take on this, that like, yeah, there's a reason to ask, you know, earnest questions about this, but also like this isn't something to completely fixate on.
As a reporter who covers the federal government, anytime a federal official is bragging about deleting emails and evading federal records law, my alarm bells go off. But there is a distinction here between the Republicans who say the fact that he was doing this clearly indicates that he was trying to cover something up, versus Democrats saying this still doesn't prove anything about COVID origins. And it is true that of the emails released, we don't know any more about how the virus began. And there's certainly nothing in them that, as far as I've seen, that says Dr. Fauci ordered a cover up. And that's why I'm deleting these emails about coronavirus.
So it sounds like Fauci was acknowledging that some of this was mishandled in terms of communications. But when it comes to the actual allegation that he personally tried to cover up the lab leak theory, he denied that, correct?
Absolutely. Dr. Fauci called some of the claims preposterous. He said he wasn't using his influence to bestow grants on virologists who agreed with him. He explained, and I think this has a lot of logic, that the reason virologists and others might have been convening for phone calls at the beginning of the pandemic was because they're trying to figure out, too, what is happening. And that was a response that the public health community generally agrees with, that Democrats have echoed. But I don't think that was the message that Americans were getting in 2020.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why this is all so interesting, because you hear these questions being asked on Capitol Hill, and I think a lot of people have a feeling that some of these questions are politically motivated and they are not always based in fact, or that the allegations are oftentimes rooted in conspiracy theories. But I think also regular Americans feel like, well, we haven't heard the definitive answer to where COVID came from, and that, you know, back in 2020, the idea that COVID could have leaked out of a lab was, you know, made to be preposterous. Now there are some scientists who say, no, like that is a potential reality and something that we should continue to investigate. And I think it leaves a lot of people feeling very confused.
I think the most revealing statistic to me is that most Americans, two-thirds of Americans in some polls, now believe that the lab leak theory is how we got COVID. So it's not a conspiracy theory, or if it is, it's a conspiracy theory that most Americans subscribe to. And rather than ignore that, I think it's better to run at that and try and understand, to the extent that we can, what happened, what do we know, And was there any effort to mislead at the time?
And in terms of where we're at in, like, investigating whether COVID could have come from a lab or sussing out whether there's any evidence to suggest that, like, briefly, what's there and what's not there? I mean, what are scientists looking at right now, or to what extent has the thinking moved away from that theory?
Well, in the scientific community, the balance of experts are still on the side of animal-to-human transmission or an animal-to-animal-to-human transmission, in part because that's what sparked previous pandemics. And it's not inconceivable to think that that is how this virus began, too. There are the cases that were centered around the market in China, the wet market where live animals were sold. It's possible that maybe there was too much focus on that and other cases were missed, but that is some of the evidence that scientists are still falling back on. They tend to believe, in the virology community, in the natural origin versus the lab leak theory. And we may never know where COVID came from. I think that's one of the arguments by Democrats to say, let's stop focusing on this and focus on the things that we can control, like getting ready for the next public health crisis, which will inevitably come.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break here, and then after the break, we will talk more about this hearing, the 6-foot rule, and how all of this may continue to play out going into the election. We'll be right back.
In France, in the 13th century, a teenager ascends the throne. He seems calm, collected, and as it happens, drop-dead gorgeous. But looks can be deceiving, and no one is ready for the death, destruction, and chaos that lie ahead. Step inside the reign of one of the Middle Ages' most cold-blooded rulers on This Is History Presents The Iron King, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Dan, I want to talk about another theme that came up during this hearing, and that was the 6-foot rule, which we are all personally familiar with. The idea, especially in, you know, the first year or two of the pandemic, that we needed to stay exactly 6 feet away from each other in order to stay safe. I think this is another place where you're seeing this intersection of, like, good faith question asking and, like, was that really a real thing that we should have been paying attention to, mixed in with some of this politicking. But can you talk about how this question came up at this hearing and why it was so fraught?
So the 6-foot rule was heavily discussed, but I think there are some key differences from the lab leak theory, Martine. First, the idea that Americans should stand 6 feet apart as a way to protect ourselves from COVID, this was in some ways a uniquely American phenomenon. The World Health Organization, for instance, recommended that people only needed to stay about 3 feet, 1 meter apart. And the decision to go with 6 feet in America had real consequences, particularly in schools. Most of them couldn't accommodate 6 feet of distance between desks. Mm. And questions were raised pretty early in the pandemic about how useful 6 feet of social distancing was if it turned out, as we later learned, that COVID was airborne. And I could be sharing the same room with you, Martine, and sitting 15 feet away. But if we're sitting in the same room for a while and one of us has COVID and
breathing the same air, and that you could still get COVID from that.
Exactly. So I think the criticism of the 6-foot rule wasn't around social distancing so much. Social distancing saved lives. It intuitively makes sense. The further you are from someone who's sick, the safer you'll be. The question is, was the 6-foot distance, given everything we learned, really the distance that we should have highlighted, especially as it became more clear that it was having a real effect on school shutdowns and other ways of American life, and that mm-hmm. there might have been other things we could have done to protect ourselves?
And it seemed in this hearing that Fauci really acknowledged some of that, the fact that there wasn't really data behind the 6-foot rule, and that he'd said earlier to lawmakers behind closed doors that there was no science behind it, were his words. So he talks a little bit about that. Let's listen to some of his testimony here.
What I meant by no science behind it is that there wasn't a controlled trial that said, compare 6 foot with 3 feet with 10 feet. So there wasn't that scientific evaluation of it. What I believe the CDC used for their reason to say 6 feet is that studies years ago showed that when you're dealing with droplets, which at the time that the CDC made that recommendation, it was felt that the transmission was primarily through droplet, not aerosol, which is incorrect because we know now aerosol does play a role. That's the reason why they did it.
So it sounds like Fauci is trying to explain a little bit some of the thinking that was happening in this moment or why they didn't have better data to base this 6 foot rule off of. But it sounds like Republicans in the room were not satisfied with that answer and really kind of pushed into him on it.
What Republicans asked, which I think is a fair question.
Did you feel an indication to go back to the CDC and said, let's base this on science. Let's get rid of this 6 foot rule.
Did you privately lobby the CDC to change its recommendation? Did you message anything differently? And Dr. Fauci said he didn't feel like that was his responsibility.
So what did you make of all this? The fact that it seems like there are legitimate questions to be asked here, but at the same time, some of the allegations of, like, Fauci making decisions in bad faith or like, lying about some of this, that seemed like it was not, in fact, based in evidence.
Martine, the hearing was 3.5 hours long. There were moments, for sure, that were insightful or offered some new information, but they were overshadowed by a lot of schlock, accusations that were not based in evidence, things that had very little to do with COVID. And I think that overshadowed any possible good that could have come from the hearing. The idea of having Dr. Fauci speak to Congress about lessons learned and answering pretty tough questions, worthy goal. Some of the ways that the hearing ended up going were befuddling, even to some of the Republicans in the room, I think.
Wait, like what? What were those befuddling moments?
So I think Marjorie Taylor Greene was top of the list. She was confrontational with Dr. Fauci.
That man does not deserve to have a license. As a matter of fact, it should be revoked and he belongs in prison.
She refused to call him Dr. Fauci, Mr. Fauci. She was citing some news coverage of things that were not fully explored, and Republicans had to step in. The chairman, Wenstrup, did rebuke her for bringing the hearing to a halt, essentially, for several minutes, even as the crowd applauded for her and led to one of the protesters in the room being escorted out.
So what is your sense of why Republicans in this room, and I think Republican politicians who weren't in this room, why they see talking about COVID now, 4 years after the start of the pandemic, still as a winning issue for them, is something that it makes sense to keep hashing out?
Entering this year, I would have had a different answer for you. But we saw Ron DeSantis flame out in a presidential campaign that was initially based on trying to capitalize on Americans' anger over COVID. That didn't work. There have been a number of politicians who just haven't been able to take COVID backlash and make it a winning issue. But I do think Dr. Fauci's a little different because he is so high profile and frankly, he is so disliked in the Republican community. If you look at the polling, the Republicans who trusted Dr. Fauci's vaccine recommendations, I believe it was under 25% versus Democrats was somewhere like 90%. So he is someone who to the Republican base is persona non grata. He's just very disliked. If Republicans can cut ads showing that they took a few licks out of Dr. Fauci, that's probably a winning issue for them. It doesn't hurt them for sure. And there are Republicans who I do think have legitimate questions about what Dr. Fauci did or didn't do during the pandemic. And that is somewhat different than the political theater that dominated Monday's hearing.
To me, it seems like this is a moment where we have just enough distance that we can really reflect on what we all went through in the pandemic. You know, the sacrifices that were made, the decisions that were made, the way that the pandemic like turned all of our lives upside down. But it also seems like that has created this almost ripe opportunity to really capitalize on that politically now. The fact that we have so many people in this country who are like looking back to 2020 and being like, God, I wish things had gone differently. And that could be a potentially powerful political force.
Maybe. I think there are a lot of Americans who really don't care that much about COVID. I mean, they might tune in when there is a headline about Dr. Fauci because they have strongly held beliefs. But I don't think there are Americans who really are looking to have long conversations about the pandemic anymore. Generally, I mean, there are many people who just want to move on with their lives. And to steal a line from a great TV show, unfortunately, all of this has happened before, and all of this will happen again 100 years ago.
What TV show is that?
It's from Battlestar Galactica.
Wow.
Yeah.
Deep cut.
Yeah. No, it's popular in some circles. But the idea that 100 years ago in the great flu, the great influenza, many Americans died in 1918, 1920. And then it was kind of forgotten from cultural memory. There weren't like great books or plays or whatever about this horrible flu. People just wanted to move on with their lives. And there was relatively little historic record. So I think the fact that 4 years out from the onset of COVID, a lot of people don't really care. I sort of get it. At the same time, I think people will care in the future when inevitably there's another crisis and people want to figure out what did we learn from this one. Or, you know, 30 years from now, the folks who were kids during COVID and kind of vaguely remember it want to know, wait, what actually happened that kept us home from school for a year? Like there may be a resurgence later, but I'm not counting really anymore, Martine, on folks wanting to get real answers on COVID. I think the dream of a bipartisan commission, like the kind of commission that probed the September 11th attacks or the Challenger disaster, that dream is dead. So we are left with this COVID panel that is imperfect and may get some answers, but is pretty stuck in partisan gridlock.
Dan, thank you so very much.
Martine, thanks for having me here, as always.
Dan Diamond is a national health reporter for The Post. We've got a couple other pieces of news for you today. President Biden has announced new measures to strictly limit the number of crossings at the southern border with Mexico. This is the administration's latest aggressive action to slow the influx of migrants coming into the country. Biden's plan would shut off access to the U.S. asylum system when illegal border crossings exceed a daily threshold. Migrants would instead be returned to Mexico or to their home countries. It's seen as part of an effort for Biden to show voters, especially independents, that he is making decisive moves on immigration. But it's frustrated many Democrats who say that Biden is ignoring the law and caving to Republican rhetoric. Today, we also saw opening statements and the first evidence in the criminal trial against President Biden's son, Hunter. Hunter is facing three felony charges in Delaware related to a gun that he purchased in 2018, allegedly while he was using illegal drugs. First Lady Jill Biden and other Biden family and friends have been in court to watch the proceedings. President Biden has not attended the trial, instead offering a written statement of support for his son and his son's recovery. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. And if you want more insights and smart reactions to the latest on what's happening in the news, check out Impromptu, our newest podcast from our colleagues on the opinion side here at The Post. A recent episode is about artificial intelligence, and it raises a provocative question. Do we actually want AI that seems human? Take a listen by following Impromptu in your podcast app. Today's show was produced by Ariel Plotnick and Emma Talkoff. It was edited by Ted Muldoon and mixed by Sean Carter. I'm Martine Powers. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.
Hey, I'm Christina Quinn, the host of Try This from The Washington Post. Each Try This audio course gets you closer to solving some of the biggest everyday challenges we face as humans. Things like how to sleep better, how to have more meaningful relationships, and how to enjoy cooking more. We're releasing new courses all the time, where you can learn to be a better functioning human without the time commitment. Find our collection of courses by searching Try This wherever you listen to podcasts.